RadioInfluence.com.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
Welcome in, everybody, to this Thursday, September 26th edition of the Landry Football Podcast. So glad to have you today, as we do every Tuesday and Thursday, taking you into a different perspective around the world of football, college football, the NFL, strategy, administrative issues, scouting issues, talking about some stories, some inside information that I can share with you as part of my coaching and scouting consulting work for college teams and NFL programs, as well as things that went on when I was running my programs at the college and NFL level. So just excited, as always, tickled pink to be with you. Got some good news for you from the great folks at MyBookie. You'll want to stay tuned for that. A lot of fun. I'm very excited about it, taking advantage of it myself. I think you should do as well. We will get to that in a second. Remind you about a couple of things as we get into week 5 of college football and week 4 of the NFL. You want the detailed film room breakdowns? You go to LandryFootball.com for that. We'll give you, for example, got the Eagles and the Packers matchup already up there. They're big game tonight for obvious reasons. What are the keys for the Packers? What are the keys for the Eagles? What do we see inside the film room and breaking down these teams? That's what we got for you. That's what we provide for you, giving you that perspective. We do that, obviously, working, obviously, getting up all the conference previews. And, yes, we break those down by conference. All the games within the conference, we break it down for you. So easy to find, easy to get a handle on what to look for in the games. So you want to take advantage of the membership at LandryFootball.com. Get that special savings discount that will get you an entire calendar year. All right, so I want to get into – got cut. By the way, one more thing. You got a question. Like, let's see, Kevin asks this. Kevin does a great job, and this is what we want you to do. Ask your question. Go to LandryFootball.com, hit Contact Chris, and send in a question. Tell me where you want to answer it. As you probably know, going to LandryFootball.com, got a bunch of podcasts doing different things. We're segmenting them down in the conference, a lot of things. So where do you want me to answer it? Just let me know, like Kevin did on this podcast. I want an answer. Boom, going to get it done here in a little bit. That's what we need to know from you as we go. We've got an interesting week, and I'm going to talk just in general about a couple of things, and then I'm going to get into some things. I'm going to talk about three things, and I'm going to get to them in order. Nick Saban came out with he was recently voted into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, and I teased this on Tuesday. I'm going to tell you the story about how he actually left LSU and went to Miami. He was involved in it, and so I can give you some firsthand accounts of, you know, how some of the things he said is certainly, you know, respectful, and while there is a lot of truth to it, I'm going to tell you kind of the real reason, you know, a couple of reasons why he left and a couple of reasons why he was always going to leave. We're going to get into to details there that you're not going to hear anywhere else because everything is secondhand. I'm going to tell you firsthand being involved in it. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the De'Eriq King situation at Houston and what is perhaps going to be a trend in the world of college football of the effects of transfers, the effect of you can play 4 games at any point in time and still redshirt and still not be obligated to stay with the school that you're with. I'm going to get into what's going on behind the scenes that's really affecting the sport of college football. And then also the California legislation bill and about likeness and getting paid. We're going to touch into a little bit of that and how that's going to not threaten, folks. It's coming. It's going to be interesting what happens between now as we sit here September of 2019. But it's going to look a whole lot different by September of 2023. And probably even before that, because there's going to be some preemptive strikes to change it. So we're going to get into a lot of that. I want to talk a little bit before we get into the meat of it. It is early in both the college and NFL season. We're deeper into the college season, but because we've not hit the heart of conference play, we still are trying to feel some things out with some of these teams. And even in conference play, you don't truly know about how some of these teams are. Here's the difference between college and the NFL. In college, yeah, the games mean more week in and week out because you have more teams, obviously, that play in college. You have some interesting games, even if you have a weekend like this one where there's not the sexy game, you're still going to have some important games and some games that may turn out to be very intriguing on how they're played. It's going to be fun to watch that because you can derail your season in 1 week in college football. But by the same token, if you're one of the elites, and this is why it's such a blue blood sport, you cannot be playing all that well by your standards and still on personnel alone, on roster alone, still muddle through and beat a lot of your opponents. So sometimes we don't even know how good teams are once they get into conference play. It's really important to kind of keep that under consideration. But I think it's kind of that maybe that next tier of good. You know, important games for like a South Carolina at home against Kentucky. It's important for a different reason. It's not all about, nor should it be all about, who's going to play in the national playoffs or win a national championship. Minnesota, Purdue's important. I mean, you don't think Washington State and Utah's important for both teams coming off of a loss, and one of them is going to lose two in a row in league play? It's big. Can Nebraska muster up anything against Ohio State? So a lot of interesting things. Maybe the most one of the most intriguing games is Friday night, Penn State, Maryland. So keep that in mind that you can learn a little bit more each week, but you always have to temper it. Arizona State, Cal, Friday night as well. You start to get a feel for it. Now, in the NFL, it's a little different because every week is important. Yeah, you got 16 games. But every week takes on a different meaning. Now, in terms of importance, you can go 12-4, win your division, and still be favored to go to the Super Bowl in the NFL. Can't lose two games and go to the playoffs in college. So every week is not as important as it is in college, but the challenges week in and week out in the NFL are greater than in college. Because as I said, if you don't play well, you play really poorly, a bad team could beat you. It happens quite frequently. So it's intriguing to kind of monitor both and kind of see where things are headed. Look, if you start building yourself a hole, if you're the Philadelphia Eagles, and I've said this on a couple of platforms this week, you go 1-3, and the Cowboys go 4-0, you've dug yourself a hole that even if you get healthy and beat the Cowboys twice, which that's an advantage you have in pro ball too, if you're trying to make a division chase, in 4-team divisions, you can beat your team twice, and you could take a 3-game lead and cut it to 1 like that. But you've got to win both, and you still need to make up ground. You can start digging yourself a hole because just because you start 1-3 and you got injuries doesn't mean you're going to go 4-0, 4-0, 3-1, 3-1 in the next quarter. And it's kind of what you're having to do. In fact, if you do that, you're 11-5. Might be good enough, might not. So again, with every week being a challenge, a difficult challenge, that's a tough ask because injuries are going to happen. You're going to catch teams in certain weeks, certain style matchups. All those things factor in. Interesting to see. All right, I want to get into I'm going to get to Kevin's questions first, staying on some football topics, and we'll go through a couple of other things. Kevin asks, I have two questions based on plays from the Giants-Bucks game. When a secondary is playing quarters coverage, of course, that's cover four. The coverage is broken down into fourths, quarters. How do they maintain their assignments when receivers cross each other 15, 20 yards downfield? Well, when you're playing in quarters, you've got a quarter of the field. So the way you break it down is you've got a zone that you're playing. You're responsible for your zone. So if you visualize, it's a podcast, so we've thought about, and technologically, this is a great question that would be answered on video. We're working on stuff like that, by the way. Maybe one day we can do that. I think we may do an answer X's and O questions like this on a whiteboard for you to explain it. But I'm going to explain it so that you can visualize a whiteboard in a diagram of a football field. So if you're looking at it, you're the quarterback and you're looking out. So you've got your receivers to your left and to your right, okay? You're looking out. You've got two deep safeties, and you've got on either side of those safeties two corners, right? They're playing cover four, quarters coverage. They've got in their area a zone. So if the route runs into the zone where, and again, it's you break it down into quarters. So if you visualize and you just kind of square off a deep right, a deep left, a left middle, and a left right, you know where your landmarks are and your responsibilities depth and width-wise. So receiver comes into your area, he's now your guy. You're now playing man-to-man once that guy enters your area. You do not jump a route because that's when a guy can get into your area, and if you got nobody in your area, it's your fault. So you have to stay in your area. It's as simple as that. And underneath it, you've got coverage responsibilities, either man underneath or zone underneath. It's usually zone in the cover four underneath as well, but you can play some man. So you've got the linebackers in their drops. They've got to cover the underneath area. So if you break it down, you've got a short right, a middle, a short left. You've got a deep left, a deep right, and then two middles in the left and right that you cover the entire field. And you practice it. And I'm going to tell you what you do on practice fields, Kevin, is in addition, obviously, you can't do this in a game, but on practice, there's literally lines drawn on a field that designate, okay, you've got from the hash to the numbers to the boundary. Those are normally your areas that you got to cover. And so you literally draw a line so that you've got area one, area two, area three, area four, and you teach it like that. So when you get on a field, there's no lines other than the hash marks in the yard lines, of course. There are no lines, teaching lines, but you've seen it so much on the practice field that you can mnemonically just know exactly when you're getting out of your zone. You got to be careful, though. If you try to sneak in another zone, you've got to have the vision to see if there's a possibility of somebody coming in, because you start to help in somebody else's zone. What happens if a guy gets free in your zone? So you cover your zone. It's as simple as that. There was a crucial play with 3:30 to play in the fourth quarter, Kevin writes. The Bucks were leading 31-25, and they were facing third and two on their 30-yard line. It seems like a perfect play call because Cameron Braid came out of the backfield wide open in the flat, but Michael Thomas made an amazing tackle to stop the Bucks 1 yard short. Is this an example of good play design, but expecting the wrong guy to get any yards after catch? It was a good play call, and it was a good tackle, and I do think there was an option. Now, if you look on the play, there was some other options. Your reads are normally deep to short, depending on situations. but you have to quickly get off of them. And it's not as easy as you think. And when we go back and look at it on tape, you know, you can see, oh, man, how did he miss that? Well, he missed it because it's coming a lot fast at you. It's kind of like when you criticize officials. How the hell did he miss that on the field right in front of him? Well, when it's a blur, you miss it. That's why we got replay. Well, we got film to break down and teach from a coaching standpoint these players. We can't use film during the course of the game. That's illegal. You can use cut-ups that shows two things. Those pictures show right before the snap and right after the snap. And it's a little bit of a teaching moment, but what you have is an eye in the sky that can chart and send down, we had this open, we missed it, and here's why we might have missed it. This is what we've got to correct next time out. And you relay that to the quarterback, relay that to the receivers, protections, whatever the case may be. No, it was a good play call. I remember the play, and he was open. And, you know, listen, good plays can stop good plays, and I think this is a good example of it. So really good questions, Kevin. We really appreciate that. I want to talk about a couple of things that are pertaining to things that are going on in college football today, but I think that are having an effect on the game. Derek King of Houston announced that he was going to stay healthy. He's fine. He's not going to play. He's going to take a red shirt. And, quote-unquote, he's coming back to Houston next year. I don't know whether he will or not. I suspect that he's not. Derek King is an outstanding quarterback, dual-threat quarterback, that could go and play a lot of places. He'll be in high demand. I suspect that he has been advised by somebody in his inner circle, family. But I can tell you that there are also, I'm not saying this is the case here, there are also people that are very involved from a legal standpoint, an advising standpoint, to tell these kids, almost like an agent, that is telling them, look, here's some options you can look at. You stay there, tell them you're coming back, you get your scholarship, practice, then you've got an option at the end of the year to decide whether you want to come back, but you can also field offers, and we'll help you field those offers, with coaches around the country that are actively recruiting players off their other rosters. Yes, it's not legal. Welcome to the world of college football, as it has been. Of course, there's a lot of that conversations going on. These are the unintended consequences. I was on Bill King's show today, as I am on every Thursday at 7 a.m. Central for 20, 30 minutes. Bill's got a great show, good friend, long time, and was asked the same thing. And I talked about it as unintended consequences. So here's what's happening is a lot of this is by design. This is part of the transfer rule that allows you to get out of hand. And this is part of the things that we talk about. And when I explained before these transfer rules took place, and everybody said, oh, it's great because players deserve the freedom and right to move on. Yeah, they do. But not just complete carte blanche, folks. You have to have certain stipulations. It needs to be situational. And I realize, yeah, I don't want the current NCAA committee deciding it because there's no rhyme or reason why they do it. I think you have to have a better system that says, look, in cases of personal circumstances, documented family matters, you want to move closer to home. Maybe there's mutually agreed that playing time's not going to be, I think you should be allowed to transfer. I also think it's great from a development standpoint for a player to say, look, I want to play four games. I want to get experience, but I want another year. I want to have another year to work at school and another year to develop my football skills. That's great. And I think it's always been the first part of the year, but circumstances may be that you play in the middle of the season or the end, you'd still like to redshirt. That's fine as well. I applaud that. but you have to have stipulations. You have to have some forethought. People that make these decisions have no clue. They've never coached. They don't understand what goes on, and they don't listen to people who have. So if you're going to do this and you want to sit out, Derek, it's great. That's fine. If they decide as a program that's what they want to do, hey, look, we think we can be better next year. That's between you and your fan base, and what you do what you want to do. You play some other guys, develop, and then see where you want to go. But you can't transfer to another school in that situation because it's circumventing the spirit of the rule, and you can't allow this to happen because you're going to see this manipulation that continues to go on. So the rules itself are fine, but you need to have stipulations, just like laws. You need to have, unfortunately in this world, you have to understand that people are going to manipulate the process, and you have to have preventative measures to prevent the manipulation of the process. There's no doubt in my mind he has no intention of coming back to Houston. Now, whether he does, personal issues, want to stay at Houston, maybe he has an idea of where he'd like to go, and maybe they don't have a spot for him, although he's really good, and he's going to find a good option. Maybe it's not right for him. He doesn't like the situation. In the end, he might decide to stay in Houston. There's no doubt in my mind that he's made this decision at this point with eyes towards shopping himself around, and we'll see where it takes it. That's not the right thing to do, just like it's not right to prevent a kid from transferring when there are legitimate reasons. If you use common sense, you can figure a lot of this out. Unfortunately, common sense is not something that is used very frequently in this process or in any processes involving the college football world. Another thing I want to get to that's going to change, and I think this is going to, if we don't address it, it's going to be an all-out frenzy. It already is with the transfer portal. I know you know that. But this is another avenue to say, the transfer portal is one thing. Player doesn't play. He feels like he's good enough to play somewhere else. He wants to transfer. That's one scenario. This is one where he is good enough to play. But you know what? They gave me a scholarship. I want to play. But you know what? Not this year. I'm going to sit out. Then I'm going to see and take stock next year. What is that saying about, being a part of it? Look, you've got to deal with this when guys get injured. That's a different scenario, of course. But I think we're dealing with a modern age, and we're seeing it in the NFL with guys saying, you know what? You don't want to trade me. I don't want to play here. I'm sick today. I got a back problem. I got to go to deal with a family issue. It's allowing the manipulation of the system that, quite frankly, is lacking integrity. And I think I don't want to be all administration here and speak strictly from a coaching and an administrative standpoint, because I know first thing people say, and rightly so, look, you're an administrator, you're old school, Landry. I need to think out of the box, and I need to think what's best for the players at the pro level, the college level, well. But I think we need to sit down and say, no. School, NFL team, you can't manipulate the system to hurt the player. But player, you can't manipulate the system to hurt your team. It's not that difficult. It just takes people that understand what goes on, and the suits don't have a clue. I want to talk a little bit about a couple other things that are on my plate. The California legislation bill, then we're going to get into the Nick Saban story issue that I think you'll find interesting. But I got something really important to tell you, and it's really comes down to this. At the end of a hard week, it's great to sit down, take some time off, watch some football. I do it every day, but I admit that come weekend when there's a new, fresh slate of games and you don't know what's going to happen and how it's going to happen, it's a lot of fun to watch it. game-winning touchdowns on two-minute drives, running backs racing down the sideline with no one to stop them. It's nothing like the NFL. And there's no way to make the games even more exciting than to bet on them. So do the smart thing and go to mybookie.ag. No one gives you more ways to win than they do. MyBookie's got the fastest payouts and better lines than any other sportsbook. Don't forget, where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on. And MyBookie.ag is the best in the business. It's where I play and where you should too. I wouldn't be telling you guys to bet if they weren't the best. Okay? Do the smart thing. If you're going to bet football this season, bet with MyBookie. If you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you multiply your winnings. And no matter how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of year. Join now and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code Landry. That's L-A-N-D-R-Y to activate the offer. That's promo code Landry, L-A-N-D-R-Y. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. Great offer there. Take advantage of it right now. I'm going to continue with the next topic that I think is going to have a tremendous impact on the world of college football. And it's what's going on out in California. The legislative bill that, in summation, deals with likeness of a player and getting paid for that. It looks like it has bipartisan support, and it's going to happen. In fact, as I understand the legislative process, as it's been explained to me, whether the governor signs it or don't sign it, it's going to be put into action. Okay, and the it is a threat. I guess that's a best way to put it. I think threat's correct. It is a mandate that says, NCAA, if you don't change how you do things, we're going through with this. Well, this is going to force the hand of the NCAA, because obviously if it doesn't, then California schools will be able to pay players for their likeness. That's going to be a tremendous advantage in recruiting. Hey, I know they got good ball over there. Come here. We'll pay you. Here's where it, again, opens up a Pandora's box, just like we just talked about with the transfer rule. Well, you're going to have players that get credit for their likeness, but there's no way to legislate that. So you can take a big booster that says, hey, Mr. Booster, that's the car dealer or whatever, come in and make appearances, Mr. Recruit. So the recruit comes. You come here. We can pay you X. Player on the team. Come in, shake a few hands, get paid whatever, whatever they're willing to pay. Are you kidding me? That's a license to cheat. That's saying, hey, you don't have to worry about maybe some of the funny stuff. We can just come out and do it. Why not? It's the likeness. Hey, I'm running a business. I like this kid, and I want to pay for his likeness, and I can do it. Again, the people that are making these rules don't understand what it's going to lead to, and it's going to lead to chaos. Well, it's not going to happen this way because the NCAA will have to do something. And this legislation is put in place not for it to stand alone in California. It is to push the NCAA into doing something they don't want to do. That's the whole purpose. New York has a proposal in their own right. They want to take 15% of all the revenue from the athletic department. 15%, 1-5. And give it to student athletes. Okay? That's what they want to do. Now, if you do that, spread it around, do you give it equal amount to all the athletes? Just the football players? Because you know if you don't, how long does it take before the swimmer or the gymnast or the volleyball player to go and sue? Title IX, we have this Title IX that was put in place in the early 70s by Richard Nixon that basically makes it illegal. Title IX is the reason why we have not as much money as people think. There's a lot of money that comes in for football and basketball, but by the time you pay everyone else, scholarships and travel and everything, not a lot of people make as much profit as you think. You think they're going to stand alone and say, we want ours? Now, Joe Public says, well, wait a minute. I don't pay money, nor do I care about gymnastics or volleyball or swimming. It may be true, but if there's legislative practice that are put in place, it could and will be law just like Title IX is currently. There'll be that form of it. So what's the solution? Well, it definitely, Mark Emmert, they said over his dead body, he's going to allow Paris to be played. What I think needs to be done under the cloak of doing more for the players is they're going to have to put together a system in the NCAA where you can take more money and allocate it more to players. And there's more money to be made in different ways, but you have to take a percentage, not let outside money, but you have to take money that comes in and you have to allocate it maybe a little bit more to players. I'm a belief that players should be given more in terms of everyone should have great nutrition programs, strength programs, and everybody thinks that everybody has that. Not everybody has it to the same degree. I believe if we're going to develop these players as students, as people, as athletes, they need to have the best nutrition program, the best strength program, the best facilities, living facilities. They should be taken care of. They should be giving clothing to wear when they make appearances. So when they make appearances and travel, that should be taken care of for them. Their parents should be allowed to come in at the expense of the school to watch them participate in their sport. Put them up in hotels. Put, you know, flights and gas money, whatever, should all be done. And I believe on top of that, there should be an increased stipend for them to do things that I think are important. But it needs to be legislated where it's an even amount. Because when you start saying, we can do this, we can allow that, you're going to have a problem. The likeness of a player, how do you control that? All right, you want to take a player that has the ability to generate revenue? Again, people say things like, well, not many players fit that category. Baloney. What boosters will do is use that as enticement to get players in recruiting and say, you come here, we promise you that you're going to get X to come and, you know, shake hands, make an appearance. So it's all legal-like. Hey, we paid for your likeness. We paid for your appearances. We'll do that. Boom. Here's a check. That's going to open up a Pandora's box. That can't be allowed to happen. It has to be controlled and organized. I think there are things that you can do to make the students' experiences better. And by the way, they're already getting paid. They're getting paid scholarship money, and I think it's criminal how the media is blowing off the fact of a scholarship as something that's just not really relevant. So I think it's important to understand that, you know, we're going to have some substantive changes. And what changes we do and how we legislate it and how we close the doors of the loopholes, I'm telling you, it's going to be interesting. I'm all for the student athlete. I'm all for them getting more money. But there's a fundamental misunderstanding of how much money goes out already, that there needs to be close, educated eyes looking at how we're going to distribute and do things. Because it's going to happen. Players will get paid in some way, shape, or form. It may not be called that. It may be increased stipend. There are different ways to name it and phrase it and frame it. It's not if. It's on its way to happening, and it will happen. how to legislate it is pivotal. Anybody confident that the way we legislate it currently works? And if the same people are doing it, are you kidding me? The first thing that needs to be done with the NCAA is to form a committee that is going to look at all of this and provide real substantive ideas. And we need to come together because you can't allow different parts. And listen, South Carolina, North Carolina, they're legislators that are pushing this. And by the way, it's not a Democratic issue. It is a Republican-pushed issue as well. So unlike most things in the world of politics that are, you know, fights between across the aisle, this one is something that apparently most everyone is agreeing on. So those of us that are in disagreement in it, we're like standing on a railroad track with an oncoming freight train coming 60 miles an hour. If we think we're stopping it, you're just going to get squished. It's happening. It's just a matter of how you're organizing and legislating, because it's changing. It's coming. All right. I want to get into something that came out over the last week or so. Nick Saban was inducted into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. And he had a statement. You know, he always liked his time here at LSU. For people who don't know, again, my background as a longtime college coach and scout, I've worked with Nick Saban on Belichick's staff and tried to get him the job at LSU back when they hired Jerry DiNardo. Then the next go-around, I was very involved in trying to convince Saban to be interested in the LSU job, because at that point he wasn't that interested. He had a negative feeling about how many coaches they had fired, the administration, how they were doing things, their commitment in terms of facilities or lack thereof, all were problems. We talked about it. But we talked a lot about how many players were coming from the state of Louisiana that's going to other places, but ending up in the NFL, that unlike where he was at Michigan State, he would be the school, not the biggest school, the only school that's playing major college football. And he was always, you know, Michigan State is always second in terms of support in the state of Michigan. And he understood that. He started to get interested. And, you know, the rest is history. So he goes to LSU. But part of the interview process is that he interviewed the chancellor there. Now, I knew Joe Dean, who was the athletic director at the time. Joe was very tight and wasn't really progressive in thinking about facilities and fundraising. It was just about, you know, saving a dollar. He wasn't progressive in thinking of how to make money. That was not why he was hired, and that was not his strength. Mark Emmert, the chancellor, speaking of President Mark Emmert, he was the chancellor of the LSU. And he was very progressive thinking. He understood the importance of increasing facilities, making the program more out front to where it could be tremendously impactful for the university. And so part of the interview process, when we convinced Nick to go and seek out the job, and I contacted, you know, mainly I talked with Mark, is about, look, he's going to interview you now. And he went in with a yellow pad, legal pad full of questions. And during that process, he was promised a new academic center, a new football operations center, and a new housing place, you know, dormitories for student athletes. And done, done, and done, it was said. Now, it can't get done overnight, but Mark went out and sold that, and he had a number of people that worked in the legislature. By the way, Scott Woodard, who's now the athletic director at LSU, was one of those guys that had a lot of political background as a lobbyist, really was heavily involved in helping to get the powers that be, the fundraisers and people on board, to do all this. And more importantly, to get people in the state legislature to understand what needed to be done from that level. And it obviously did it very effectively. So he builds a program, obviously a great one at LSU, which we all thought was a sleeping giant, but could not get out of their way. So, you know, keep that in mind, Tennessee fans or anybody else that's struggling. You can do it if you have the right people in charge. He built the power. When he was at LSU, Nick, he had a direct line to the chancellor. This was an unusual relationship. Joe Dean was the athletic director, then replaced by Skip Bertman, the former baseball coach. Nick didn't even, other than just a cursory hello, didn't even pay any attention to his athletic director. It was an open line to Nick to Emmert. There was any problem, Nick would get on the phone, and Emmert would send the marching orders down, and that certainly rubbed people in LSU administration the wrong way. But the reason is, Nick's philosophy is he doesn't have time to sit there and hear why we can't do stuff. You're the guy that promised me that we'd do this, and this is what we need to do. And I don't have time to sit there and go to a bunch of meetings about why we can or can't do this or how we do it. Just get the damn thing done. And so after a few cases of dealing with that, he went straight to Emmert the whole time. Because, well, in the past, we haven't done it that way. Well, you haven't done it that way, and that's why you're not very good. That was his feeling. So because Emmert made the commitment and was on the line with the hire, and he was the guy that made the hire, not Joe Dean, not anyone else. That was a close relationship, and he built a power. He left LSU in the best it's ever been. You can argue that there was in a different era, in a different time. Paul Dicho had it at an elite level, no doubt. But this is the best infrastructure and the best organized LSU's ever been. And I think the university grew. Look at the buildings, those of us that have been around the campus all our lives. Just what they did with the engineering, the College of Business. And LSU's really grown as a result of that notoriety. I never quite get the connection, because football is one thing and how it raises so much money for the university. It really does. And it gets a lot of people interested, and the exposure gets a lot of students interested. I never quite get people who really never played football, don't, you know, maybe kind of like it, but get exposed to a certain part of an academic endeavor through athletics. It's amazing. It does happen. I've been shown how it's happened. So Nick has that relationship with Mark, and it worked well. But there was always the understanding that at some point Nick was going to go into the NFL. He had plenty of opportunities. We talked about different ones, and he knew what he wanted. He wanted the Bill Belichick model. If he went somewhere, he was going to have complete control of the organization, answer only to the owner. That's how he was going to do it. And anybody else that had a different plan didn't work. His buddy Jerry Angelo offered him a job in Chicago. He wasn't interested in working for the Bears. He loved Jerry Angelo. He wasn't going to answer to Jerry Angelo. He's going to answer to the owner and no one else. That's how it was going to be. That's what he wanted. That's what he sought out. And so, but opportunities were there. And it wasn't as much as people think. He wasn't seeking it out. He thought if he was going to stay in college, that LSU was ideal. It was absolutely ideal. But as the offers came in, and again, the situation wasn't right. Timing's everything. Situation's everything. Mark Emmert gets an opportunity to go back home to Seattle, Washington, and become the president of the University of Washington. That's where his parents were and still were. He brought Scott Woodard with him to Washington. And from LSU, Scott's a Baton Rouge guy, brought him to Washington, and Scott was basically an assistant to the chancellor, kind of a go-to guy, right-hand man type. And he brings him to Washington. And eventually, Woody becomes the athletic director at Washington. Because, as we know, Mark Emmert eventually went on and run the NCAA, which he is still currently is. And for all the criticism, NCAA, the guy did a tremendous job at Washington and certainly at LSU as chancellor, in both places, chancellor and president. So when Mark left, there became a void there. And Nick recently had a great comment that he said that, I in some ways, I wish I'd never left it. If I could do things over again professionally, I'd probably never leave LSU. And that was a way to kind of thank the people for that were involved in voting them into the Louisiana Hall of Fame. And to kind of say how much I loved it and, you know, yada, yada, yada. And it's all true. But I'm going to – that's not the whole story. The reality was once Mark Emmert left, the clock began ticking for Nick to find the right NFL job. I know because we began, you know, seeking out different situations. He wasn't looking to leave, but he certainly the right one. He was going to look hard at it. Now, because he no longer has the phone call to Mark Emmert. At this point, he's having a phone call to Skip Bertman, who Nick didn't have a whole lot of respect for. Skip was a figurehead BS guy, former baseball coach that, not very impressive in terms of getting things done. And he did a great job. Skip was interested in baseball. He understood that football, you know, stirred the drink as it always does. But again, Skip didn't necessarily know how to, he didn't have the Midas touch. And now he's answering to somebody that's running the university. So the hierarchy became a little bit, because now Nick's going to sit there and answer to Skip Bertman? I don't think so. I mean, that's where the structure is, but that wasn't working well. And Skip and the administration wasn't really happy with having to deal with Nick and his demands, but what are they going to do? Well, they were, believe it or not, you know, relieved when he left, but knew they were in trouble because the football program, which carries basically the flagship of the university, was not going to be as good without Nick. So they wanted to keep him and did everything they could to keep him, but Nick was always going to leave once Emmert left, but he wasn't going to leave and get out the door the first job that came open. It had to be the right fit. Well, the Dolphins came open. Wayne Huizenga and Eddie Jones, good friend, God rest his soul, was the president of the Dolphins. And he handled the administrative part of the Dolphins for years, even when Shula was there. And he kind of did the work for the owner, and he was the right-hand man of the owner, Wayne Huizenga. And we talked with Eddie, and certainly the Nick Saban interest level was at a fever pitch around the NFL. What he had done at LSU and what he had done at Michigan State, a lot of NFL people wanted to hire him, so it was going to be a feather in Wayne's cap to get him. And Eddie's got, so we talked, and Eddie talked about what he would need, and I said, look, the money part, that's, you guys got to work that out. I don't know, I don't get into that, but let me just tell you about the football structure that's going to need to happen. This is the plan you need to have in place to approach his agent, Jimmy Sexton, about what you're doing. You're going to have to be willing to spend a lot of money. Well, Wayne's willing to do that. Okay, that's fine. But you're going to have to give him complete control. He's going to have some really interesting ideas about how to assemble a coaching staff and a scouting staff on how to do it. He was with Bill Belichick. That's his model. That's what he wants to do. But I think he has some different ideas that are even a little bit more aggressive than Belichick had in Cleveland in terms of staff hires. Well, what do you mean by that? Well, I had talked with Nick a few times about, you know, he always understood. He was very smart. He knows it's hard for people to work for. So he was always concerned about, you put together a structure, you train a coach, and he goes and leaves. I said, well, what you need to do is, with the right owner, is you've got to have an assistant at each position that's ready to to move up. So your linebacker coach leaves to go and be a coordinator, then your assistant moves up. It also helps the linebacker coach become better and skilled because he's got an assistant to help him in coaching and preparation. And it gives you – it's an advantage. There are no salary cap for coaches. Take advantage of it. Now, good luck finding an owner that's willing to do that because that's not the easiest thing in the world. Belichick doesn't have that. Belichick doesn't do it. He doesn't like that idea personally. He doesn't like as many people. Nick did. So that was one of the things that he thought he would need to put in place. He also wanted to hire, quote-unquote, somebody that would do GM things but work under Nick. So we talked about people there and what we did. So I handled a lot of consulting stuff on that. And when it came down to talk to Eddie Jones, it was about, well, what are some of the aggressive things? So that, it's going to cost an awful lot, you know, probably more than double from a coaching staff standpoint to get done what he wants. He's going to have multiple guys on the staff that can handle when people leave to move in. Analysts and quality control, a lot of different, well, I don't know. Well, you know, that's what I think it's going to take, quite frankly, Eddie. You know, goes back, get a call. Hey, Wayne says whatever it takes. Well, might be on to something here. So anyway, long story short, Nick gets into several meetings, and you know, the LSU folks are concerned about, you know, the administration. They like to keep him. So I'm sitting there trying to say, all right, well, what could be done? I'm trying to help LSU keep him, but I'm also trying to help him if he wants to leave, make sure he's leaving for a good situation, in a right situation. So he's got the right situation. Yep, you can hire a D-line coach and an assistant D-line coach. You can hire that. You can do all that. You can reshape your scouting staff, have more people, more staff, bring in your own administrative people. Carte blanche. So that's a good situation. Now, what would appease him at LSU? I talked to LSU about being creative. Think outside the box. I said, this is not something that's common today. But I said, what you should do, the only thing you could do, and I don't know that it's going to be enough, but you should make a proposal where Nick is the athletic director at LSU, in title only, with the power, and let him hire the quote-unquote athletic director that's going to do the job. And the guy that we were going to put in that position was Oliver Luck. Great administrator, Andrew Luck's dad. Now the head of the XFL, and he's, you know, certainly been an athletic director and done great things. He was going to be the athletic director for Nick Saban, associate athletic director, you know, titles. Nick was going to be the athletic director. In essence, Oliver would make all the decisions. Nick would have no interest and concern about, you know, what's being done with other sports, but making sure he would lay down the framework of how he wanted the athletic department to shape and look, and how, you know, football would kind of be the top, and everything would funnel from it. And that was a plan, an idea. Of course, you had factions there. Well, Skip Bertman didn't want that. He wanted to protect his job, and I understand that. I'm not being critical. And then there wasn't anybody there. I know that had Mark Emmert still been there, Mark Emmert would have done just that. In fact, in talking with him, he said he'd made him vice chancellor, athletic director, head football coach. Do something that's never been done. And again, Mark would work with, you know, who you want running the athletic department, and it would be basically the same operating procedure, just somebody else under Nick would handle the athletic department. So it would be more control, more power, which he had anyway, but it would be in a little bit more structured way. Now, would that have been enough to keep Nick from taking this opportunity in the NFL? I don't think so. It would have. He thought hard about staying at LSU, but quite frankly, not as much as people think. I think he would have thought very it would have been something that he would not have gotten anywhere else, but would have been the best run that LSU could have made to keep him. I still think that going into the NFL, with it, that was something, being a head coach in the NFL, that was on his list that he wanted to do. And he had to scratch that itch. And the Miami situation, while really great from an ownership standpoint and a support standpoint and giving him everything he wanted, there's not much passion in Miami for football. It's a lot like it's a mini L.A. Yeah, you'll win. They'll support you. There's no doubt. But when you got to rebuild, and you, it's a very pro-ish town, yes, but not real passionate. It's L.A. Southeast, if you will. It's what it is. And so we all know the story, and I'll end it this way, that we know that he goes into Miami, he takes a bad situation, goes 9-7 the first year. You all know by now he wanted to sign Drew Brees. That was nixed by the doctors. In fact, it was discouraged by the guy that did the surgery, Dr. Andrews. And anyway, you know, rest is history. He might have stayed there. Let me just say this. The Alabama situation was intriguing to him, but was not something he was interested in. The Alabama job was a Terry Saban push. Nick preferred to stay at Miami. I think he preferred the pro atmosphere, but you know, I think it would have been, had he had the ownership change, which it was eventually with Wayne, that might have made it, you know, less appealing to him if you got a different owner in, and obviously he would not have liked working with Steve Ross and for Steve Ross. But that situation was very appealing, and he wanted to stick it out. Terry Saban hated it. Terry, his wife, loves being Miss Louisiana, Miss Alabama, First Lady. No one cared in Fort Lauderdale or Miami, which, by the way, he had an unbelievable place on the lake, and it was beautiful and all that. Terry was not happy because nobody cared. Nobody knew who she was. Nobody knows who the wife is of the head coaches in the NFL. But when you're a big-time coach in college, that wife becomes really intimately involved with the players, with booster functions, and Terry loves that. Terry eats that up. And so when the Alabama situation came along, and Mal Moore was smart. He sold Terry Saban, and Terry Saban sold Nick Saban. Mal did a good job, but he sold the right person. Like in recruiting, you got to appeal to the mamas, the daddies. You got to find out who the trigger point is. Trigger point with Nick is Terry. And Terry pushed it. In fact, Nick had basically agreed that he was going to Alabama. And I talked with him, and I could tell he had second thoughts. And I learned later that he called Terry from the car phone one day. He says, I'm not doing this. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. I want to stay here. And he wanted to back out of that. And Terry talked him out of it. And as they say, the rest is history. So it's been great for Alabama football. It's great. I'm sure Nick is, after how many championships later now, very, very happy. And eventually the Miami situation would have been more difficult to win consistently, certainly with an ownership changes, but we'll never know how good he was. He can't look back and say he was successful as a coach in the NFL. He wasn't there long enough, and he just had one good first year. I believe he would have won, but you know, I don't know that in that division that he would have been able to beat Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. So it probably worked out for him. Goes to Alabama, and now he's going to be regarded as the greatest college football coach in history. So, but he was always leaving LSU, and when Mark Emmert left LSU, it was only a matter of time before he was leaving LSU. Now, I think all things considered, had some of the structures been put in place that were very unusual and outside-the-box thinking, maybe they would have had a chance. But the one thing that LSU couldn't do is give him the opportunity to scratch the itch of coaching in pro football. So thought you might be interested in that story. Hey, appreciate you joining us today. We'll keep you up to date on everything going on around the football, in the world of football, over at LandryFootball.com. Check us out. Take advantage of the discount there. And we'll talk to you on Tuesday on another edition of the Landry Football Podcast on LandryFootball.com.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
I'm Jerry Petuck, CEO of Radio Influence. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on any of our programming, or if you have some show ideas you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you take time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means more than you could ever know. Without you, the listener, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to all of our programming. You can find all of Radio Influence's programming on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.